From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Welcome to Washington Watch, a beacon of truth to guide you through the maze of today's headlines, armed with insights, analysis, and interviews, all from a biblical worldview. So over the next hour, we will seek not just information, but understanding, not just noise, but clarity on matters that matter most to your family. Washington Watch starts now.
It is absurd to oppose this on the grounds that it somehow limits free speech. Calling for death to Jews is not protected speech. It is anti-Semitic.
That was New York Congressman Mike Lawler on the House floor yesterday as the House debated the Anti-Semitism Awareness Act, which is aimed at addressing anti-Semitism on university campuses. Congressman Lawler joins us in just a moment. And FRC's Vice President for Policy, Travis Weber, will also join me in the studio to break down the bill and give us an update on other Hill action this week. Well, better late than never. The president, who has avoided addressing the pro-Hamas, anti-Israel riots on college campuses, briefly addressed the issue today.
In moments like this, there are always those who rush in to score political points. But this isn't a moment for politics. It's a moment for clarity. So let me be clear. Peaceful protest in America. Violent protest is not protected. Peaceful protest is.
We're going to take a closer look at the lawlessness that has spread across university campuses, what's behind it, and where might it lead. Dr. Jennifer Bowens, director for the Center for Family Studies here at the Family Research Council and a former Ivy League professor, will join me. And is a ceasefire in Gaza close?
Israel has come again and again to the negotiating table and has made very difficult concessions on our end to bring our people home. Hamas only hardens its conditions and entrenches itself in its own reasonable demands. The only thing preventing a hostage deal at any of these negotiation tables is Hamas.
That was Israeli government spokesman Rachela Carmason. I'll be joined in the studio by a member of the Israeli Knesset. Simcha Rothman will join me later here in the studio. The website, TonyPerkins.com, lots of resources there for you, as well as contact information and other resources from our guests today. By the way, let me remind you, May the 19th is our Pray For and Stand With Israel Sunday. To be a part of that event, as churches across the nation join together to pray for Israel, simply text the word Israel to 67742. That's Israel to 67742. Well, arrests and detainments have continued on university campuses as college officials turn to local law enforcement to restore order and dismantle pro-Hamas protest. The largest dust-up overnight occurred at the University of California, Los Angeles, where officers in riot gear cleared out an encampment and detained dozens of demonstrators. Well, yesterday, as I mentioned, the House passed the Anti-Semitism Awareness Act, which, if enacted, has to go through the Senate, will provide the Department of Education with increased tools to address anti-Semitism. Joining me now to discuss this is Congressman Mike Lawler, the lead sponsor of this legislation. He serves on the House Foreign Affairs Committee and the House Financial Services Committee. He represents the 17th Congressional District of New York. Congressman Lawler, welcome to Washington Watch. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
So let me start with your reaction to both the ongoing protest and finally a response that we're seeing from the White House on what has been occurring on college campuses.
Well, I think it's long overdue, obviously, in terms of the White House response. I don't think there's any question that President Biden and Senator Schumer and other leading Democrats have been more concerned about their electoral prospects and the impact that these protests are having among the Democratic base. But these protests are so overwhelmingly anti-Semitic and need to be rooted out at every turn. This is not a function of free speech. It's not a function of, protesting against decisions made by the Israeli government or the United States government. That's constitutionally protected. This is anti-Semitic hate at its worst. People calling for death to Jews, death to Israel, death to America, death to Zionists, calling for Jews to go back to Poland, calling for the eradication of the state of Israel. That is anti-Semitic and should be stopped, especially on these university campuses. And these administrators, starting with President Shafik, have failed in their responsibility to ensure the safety and well-being of these students. And that's why, you know, I have been among many, including Speaker Johnson, in being so forceful in condemning what's happening.
So, Congressman, as I have read through the legislation and listened to the conversation regarding it, the main thrust is to adopt a standardized definition of anti-Semitism, which actually takes a definition that's already in existence, the International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance. And this is actually language that's been used by the State Department for quite some time. So this is really not new. In fact, I think, if I'm not mistaken, there was an executive order during the Trump administration doing something very similar. So this is not new. Am I correct?
Correct. This is a definition going back to the Obama administration and continuing through President Trump and now President Biden that is widely accepted. Nearly every Jewish organization in America agrees with this definition. And it is one that identifies for the Department of Education, you know, a very clear, concise definition and allows them to go after Title VI violations of the 1964 Civil Rights Act. What we're trying to do here is to give some teeth for the Department of Education to enforce the law by clearly identifying what anti-Semitism is. It does not mean that every single instance that, you know, is identified in the contemporary examples, therefore, you know, is going to result in some type of situation. But it's giving, you know, examples that can be referenced depending on the context of what is occurring. And so this is a widely accepted definition. President Trump issued an executive order on this definition. And so we're simply codifying this into law.
So what, in addition to that, what is new is that it is now being, this addresses education, Department of Education. It's been at the State Department. Now it would be at the Department of Education by law. I want to ask you, there's been some opposition raised about this. In fact, I talked to the speaker about it yesterday. He called me about this because there was concerns that some were saying, a couple of your colleagues were saying that this would criminalize the gospel. I don't see that.
No, not at all. Look, I'm a practicing Catholic, you know, born and raised, go to church. I believe very deeply in the gospel and in Jesus Christ. But what we're saying in here by codifying this definition and its contemporary examples, one of the examples that some of my colleagues were referencing says that if you are using a anti-Semitic trope such as, you know, Jews kill Jesus, meaning all Jews are Christ killers, then, yeah, that can be deemed anti-Semitic if you're trying to imply that all Jews or all Israelis are Christ killers. Nobody is saying that that the Bible should be criminalized. Nobody is saying that anybody who believes in the context of the Bible is somehow wrong. What it is saying is if you are trying to use something for the purpose of attacking an entire group of people and trying to associate them with some action that someone else may have taken for the purpose of discriminating against them, then that can be considered anti-Semitic. But in no way is anybody objecting to or trying to target Christians with this bill. This is about putting in place protections on college campuses for Jewish students.
To be clear, that you reference is not in the bill. That is an example that is on the website of the International Holocaust Remembrance Association. So it's the only thing in the bill is the definition itself of what anti-Semitism is. Another one of your colleagues said that this is, you know, we ought to be going after actions, not thoughts, that this is somehow criminalizing beliefs and thoughts. Speak to that.
Well, listen, in 1969, Father Hesburgh, the president of Notre Dame, issued a letter to faculty and students in which he said, look, you have the right to protest. You have the right to offer your opinion. You have the right to object to decisions by the government. But the moment those protests turn violent or that there are threats of violence, you lose that right. And you'll have 15 minutes by which to disperse and cease and desist. And if you don't, we will verify that you have an ID. And if you have an ID, you'll be suspended. If you don't, you'll be arrested. And if you stay further, you'll be expelled and arrested. The objective here is to get back some sanity and control on these college campuses. We want robust public debate. People should be free to voice their opinions, their objections to decisions made by the government. Nobody is disputing that. And even in the definition, it says if you criticize the state of Israel as you would any other government, that's fine. That's not anti-Semitic. But if you're just criticizing Israel because it's a Jewish state where you're against the Zionist state and you want all Zionists to die, then, yeah, that is anti-Semitic. And so, you know, I respect my colleagues who, you know, have had a different perspective on this. But I think clearly defining what anti-Semitism is and providing some context to what is happening in America today is important, especially as the Department of Education seeks to enforce Title VI violations.
I agree that we should have clear definitions. I think the same problem we see with like hate crimes, hate speech, there's no definition out there. And so it's like silly putty. It's stretched to accomplish whatever someone wants to do. I will also point out that in this legislation that passed the House yesterday, it reads constitutional protections. Nothing in this act shall be construed to diminish or infringe upon any right protected under the First Amendment to the Constitution of the United States. So speech, religious freedom is not affected by this.
Not in the least. And that's why there was broad bipartisan support. You saw 320 members of Congress vote for this bill. None of us would put forth something that would curtail free speech and First Amendment rights or violate someone's constitutional freedoms. But what we're seeing on these college campuses every day is a violation of federal law and violating the constitutionally protected rights of Jewish students in particular, based on what is happening on these campuses. And so we're trying to provide the Department of Ed, as well as these universities, a clear path forward on how to deal with these instances of anti-Semitism.
A final question very quickly, Congressman Lawler. What are the next steps? The prospects in the Senate, are they good?
Look, there's broad bipartisan support in the Senate as well. I mean, I had 59 co-sponsors on this bill heading into the vote yesterday, and obviously we had 320 members support it. There's strong bipartisan support in the Senate. And my hope is that Chuck Schumer, the highest ranking Jewish official in American history, will put forth this bill for a vote and let the senators have their say. And ultimately that President Biden would sign it into law. As we pointed out in the interview, this is a widely accepted definition, right, that the State Department has already used, and we're simply codifying it into law.
All right, Congressman Lawler, thank you so much for taking time to join us today.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. All right, we're going to continue to track this. We talked to Senator James Lankford, who's handling it in the Senate. We'll probably talk to him next week about it. All right, don't go away. After the break, what's behind these demonstrations on college campuses? We'll talk about it.
Christians must be sure to faithfully think about the issues that have taken our culture and many of our churches by storm from a biblical perspective. Family Research Council's David Clawson, along with co-authors Denny Burke and Colin Smothers, released a new book, Male and Female, He Created Them, a study on gender, sexuality, and marriage to help Christians better grasp the Bible's teaching about these issues. This study presents a biblical view of homosexuality, transgenderism, and marriage. With this new resource, readers will be given guidance on specific questions related to preferred pronouns, identity, intersex conditions, and other matters that our churches must be discipling their members to respond to with love and biblical conviction. As part of the study, readers have access to supplemental videos by Dr. Albert Moeller, Dr. Heath Lambert, Reverend H.B. Charles, Dr. Christopher Yuan, Dr. Rosaria Butterfield, and others that expand and elaborate the themes of each chapter. To purchase a copy, go to hecreatedthem.org.
Today we find that global persecutions of Christians is growing more menacing every year. Family Research Council's Leela Gilbert, Ariel Del Turco, and Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin's book, Heroic Faith, shares personal stories from those who have endured religious persecution and gives a close look at the dire situations Christians often face due to dangerous and sometimes deadly opposition to their faith. The book's true stories of persistence and faithfulness amidst crisis offer inspiration and hope. Heroic Faith also provides insights into the ideologies driving the hostility and persecution, what steps the U.S. government might take to help, and how readers can best respond to the struggles of the faithful. It is critical for us to learn from our brothers and sisters who are suffering deeply and to do whatever we can to help. You can get your copy of Heroic Faith wherever books are sold or by going to frc.org/heroicfaith. Again, that's frc.org/heroicfaith. Men are constantly told that there is no place for their thoughts and concerns about abortion. However, this attitude ignores the fact that both women and men are deeply and personally affected by abortion. Furthermore, one does not have to be a woman to know that abortion ends the life of an innocent, unborn child. Every man has a role to play in protecting unborn lives and supporting the mothers in their families and greater community, which is why FRC's Center for Human Dignity has released a resource titled A Man's Guide to Standing for Life. This resource was created to help men positively address the topic of life. This guide will equip men with phrases to utilize or avoid, as well as practical tips for helping to protect life and the expectant mother or unborn child he knows. Every man has the opportunity to be an unborn baby's hero by stepping in to support a mother and speaking up for her child's life. Get this free guide at frc.org/prolifemen to learn more about the important role men play in protecting unborn lives.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. Good to have you with us. And again, May the 19th, our Pray For and Stand With Israel Sunday. To join us and be a part of it, text Israel to 67742. That's Israel to 67742. All right, as the chaotic and often violent pro-Hamas demonstrations embroil campuses throughout the country, many people removed from student life have been forced to ask, what is going on these university campuses? What is behind this chaos and this confusion? I mean, it's more than just political. There's something here. Joining me now to help us understand this, Dr. Jennifer Ballins, the director of the Center for Family Studies here at the Family Research Council. Dr. Ballins has taught psychological trauma and research methods in several graduate programs, including Rutgers University and Princeton Seminary. She's been at these Ivy League schools. Dr. Ballins, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thanks for having me, Tony.
You also have a PhD. Your PhD is from New York University, which was rocked by demonstrations this week. So this is familiar terrain for you. What's going on?
Well, when I was at NYU, we were starting to see some of the seeds of the anti-Semitism. And you wouldn't think in a city with so many Jewish people producing such great work and, you know, a lot of academic colleagues are Jewish. We worked with Israeli universities.
By the way, a lot of your research had to do with trauma incorporated a lot of what's happened in Israel.
That's right. And the interesting thing is that we were boycotting Jewish professors. We were talking about boycotting Jewish professors back in, I want to say it was around 2010. And you just wouldn't think that with so many Jewish faculty at NYU and Columbia and all of the other schools that we're talking about, that they're protesting their own people. And so you have to wonder what on earth is going on. And I think there are a couple of factors here. There is certainly, you know, the context that the Marxist kind of context that we've been dealing with, where you have the oppressed and the oppressor. And that has given way, it, I think, has really filled the vacuum of a spiritual void, right? Because we, in the academy, Christianity has kind of fallen by the wayside. A lot of our textbooks talk about how backwards Christians are. It's not pro-Christian. Let's just say
that's been filled by this Marxist ideology.
Yes, and so you can see it applies in a lot of different contexts. It applies to the transgender issue that we often talk about on the program, but it also applies to this context where those who have a biblical basis are considered to be the oppressor. And that's true for Christians, it's true for Jews, but right now we're really seeing this, flaring with the Jewish people.
Should we be seeing what's happening on these college and university campuses as a warning?
Yes. We should see this as a warning because this is not new. What we're seeing is more fruit. And we're seeing, you have to think about the student body. I talked to a friend of mine, a former colleague who is a professor, and we said back in 2014, 2015, have you noticed that the student body seems to be less mature than the years before? And we both agreed that was the case. Well, why is that the case? A lot of it has to do with emotional development, the kind of brokenness that kids are coming from, and all of those things, they need to be filled somehow. And so you have professors who have a certain ideological bent, many from the 60s. They didn't get saved in the Jesus People movement,
yeah.
Right? And so they have a certain ideology that they're bringing to the table, and they're shepherding young, vulnerable minds to think a certain way, and they're all the more vulnerable because of all of the emotional baggage that they're walking in.
So, Dr. Bowens, if I'm hearing you correctly, legislation like we were just talking about, while it's needed, is not the solution. It may put a Band-Aid on the situation, may contain it, but it's not going to fix it because this is spiritual in its nature, if I'm hearing you correctly.
Yeah, when I look at those protesters, I want to weep because I see people who are sheep without shepherds. And I weep for the Jewish people, too, the fact that they're having to deal with this kind of, I can't imagine going to campus every day wondering, is some random person going to harm me just because of who I am, who I've been created to be?
When you think of the Marxist ideology of the oppressed and the oppressor, and you look at Israel, or let's say the Jewish people, you have the Jewish state of Israel, but it's a small, percentage-wise of the world's population, it's tiny. So it has to be more. They're not like this powerful nation that is a global power. They're not like China, not like the United States, not like Russia, but yet they elicit so much hatred. So that should be a clue right there that there's more to this than meets the eye.
Well, and it's like what Jesus said, if you were of the world, then the world would love you, but you're not. And it's the same for the Jewish people because they represent God. And yes, there are differences in the Jewish faith and
right.
Christian faith,
right.
Of course, but the principle is the same. They were, if it weren't for the Jewish people, we would not have a Messiah.
Right.
We would not have Jesus.
Nor a Bible.
Or a Bible, right? And so we, give honor where honor's due. And we need to support the Jewish people, pray for them, but also recognize that this is a spiritual battle. And the enemy, if you believe in that, there is a spiritual enemy who wants to stomp out anything that has to do with God.
Very quickly, about 30 seconds left, Dr. Bowens. How should we be responding to what is happening on these university campuses? With that understanding, you said this is not the end of it. This should be a warning sign.
Yeah, it should be a warning sign, but it should also be great hope, because where people who've been forgiven much will love much, and I believe that God is going to rock our campuses in a very good way. And so, pray for our universities. If you feel led to start groups there, preach the gospel there. The harvest is ripe. And we have a real opportunity with this generation to see many come to the Lord.
So we should see this not as something that should repel us from these university campuses, but rather should draw us to meet the need that is being evidenced in the lives of these young people.
Run into the fire.
Yeah. Dr. Bowens, always great to talk with you.
You too.
Thanks for being here. All right, folks, when we come back, we're going to talk to Travis Weber. Vice President of Policy. We're going to break down the anti-Semitic awareness bill that passed yesterday. We're going to talk about it. Don't go away. We're back after this.
Christians must be sure to faithfully think about the issues that have taken our culture and many of our churches by storm from a biblical perspective. Family Research Council's David Clawson, along with co-authors Denny Burke and Colin Smothers, released a new book, Male and Female, He Created Them, a study on gender, sexuality, and marriage to help Christians better grasp the Bible's teaching about these issues. This study presents a biblical view of homosexuality, transgenderism, and marriage. With this new resource, readers will be given guidance on specific questions related to preferred pronouns, identity, intersex conditions, and other matters that our churches must be discipling their members to respond to with love and biblical conviction. As part of the study, readers have access to supplemental videos by Dr. Albert Moeller, Dr. Heath Lambert, Reverend H.B. Charles, Dr. Christopher Yuan, Dr. Rosaria Butterfield, and others that expand and elaborate the themes of each chapter. To purchase a copy, go to hecreatedthem.org.
Today we find that global persecutions of Christians is growing more menacing every year. Family Research Council's Leila Gilbert, Ariel Del Turco, and Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin's book, Heroic Faith, shares personal stories from those who have endured religious persecution and gives a close look at the dire situations Christians often face due to dangerous and sometimes deadly opposition to their faith. The book's true stories of persistence and faithfulness amidst crisis offer inspiration and hope. Heroic Faith also provides insights into the ideologies driving the hostility and persecution, what steps the U.S. government might take to help, and how readers can best respond to the struggles of the faithful. It is critical for us to learn from our brothers and sisters who are suffering deeply and to do whatever we can to help. You can get your copy of Heroic Faith wherever books are sold or by going to frc.org/heroicfaith. Again, that's frc.org/heroicfaith.
This is Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins, your host. Good to have you with us on this Thursday. The website, TonyPerkins.com. And again, to join us May the 19th for the Pray For and Stand With Israel Sunday, text Israel to 67742. All right, as I discussed earlier in the program, the House passed the Anti-Semitism Awareness Act yesterday following weeks of anti-Israel and pro-Hamas demonstrations on university campuses. If enacted, this legislation would allow the Department of Education to adopt the International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance definition of anti-Semitism when enforcing nationwide anti-discrimination laws. Now, as we talked about earlier, the State Department uses the same definition. Many other entities do as well. Now, some conservatives worry this would create a new layer of DEI bureaucracy and possibly criminalize free speech, as we were discussing earlier. Well, joining me now to look at this a little closer is Travis Weber, Vice President of Policy and Government Affairs here at the Family Research Council. Travis, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony.
Very quickly, before we jump into this other top items you've been working on this week that our folks need to know about?
Yeah, so it's important to know that we at FRC continue to focus on the appropriations process, how our government spends the tax dollar, and we're making sure that appropriations bills, as much as we can, are pro-family, pro-life, pro-religious freedom.
And that's actually in the works for next year.
It's in the works for next year. Yeah. You know, some of the bills we got this year were very solid due to the hard work of a lot of folks, but we have to protect these all the way through the process because they'll often get watered down in negotiation, but we're constantly working on that topic.
World Health Organization, WHO, that's coming up next week, or next month, or actually this month, later this month, with their global power grab, the pandemic accord. What's up with that?
Yeah, so thankfully it's getting more attention. We need to continue to raise the temperature on the concerns here. This is infringement on sovereignty, and it's just pro-abortion. The WHO, this will be implemented in a pro-abortion manner. So Tom Tiffany has a bill in the House, Ron Johnson in the Senate. Chris Smith continues to work hard on this issue. So I think the sovereignty issues need to be addressed, and people need to be aware and engaged on that.
Yeah, by the way, folks, WHO 67742, information there for you on the World Health Organization, WHO 67742. All right, got to get to this quickly, Travis. This anti-Semitism awareness law, what does it do and what does it not do?
Yeah, so Tony, this at the core of it, it provides a definition for how to understand anti-Semitism as our government enforces current law on the books, ethnic discrimination in Title VI, federal funding. So it says you can't discriminate this way if you get federal funds. This has been around for decades, and it can already be enforced in a manner concerning anti-Jewish activity, okay? This just gives a definition, one that conservatives have agreed on.
A standard.
Standard definition.
So isn't it better to have a definition of a particular word than just have something that is malleable?
Absolutely. It's better to have this definition. It's been around for a while. This is the definition President Trump put into executive order when he was in office. And so this has been around. So it should not be an issue. And the definition does not infringe on free speech.
Does it criminalize the gospel?
It does not criminalize the gospel because, as was mentioned earlier in the program, there are references to how language is used with claims that, you know, the Jews killed Jesus. But even that has to be attached to the state of Israel. So it's a very specific, narrow issue. And plus, even in our law, as you've already mentioned, because you have a reference to this does not mean that this resolution can override our First Amendment right. It just doesn't mean. It's just not there.
Historically, if you go to the website of the International Holocaust Remembrance Association, they have those lists of contemporary examples of anti-Semitism. That's where that one that you referenced, which historically in history has been used to say that the Jews killed Jesus. Frankly, if you're a Bible-believing Christian, the Bible says Jesus laid down his life.
Jesus laid down his life. Jesus was handed over to Pontius Pilate by certain leaders and was put to death by the Roman government. And we know, as you understand from reading the Word, we know that Jesus laid it down and God, as a sacrifice for all, as Romans 5:12 tells us, all are made right and have the way of reconciliation open to God because Jesus laid down his life for all of us.
We're responsible for the fact that he had to die for our sins.
Our sin put him on the cross.
Right. So I know that that's been used historically, but for Bible-preaching churches that are preaching the gospel, this is not an issue. This legislation is not an issue.
We celebrate what Jesus has done for us as the most important thing in our lives, and we just need to relish in the glory of what God has provided and made a way for us as laid out in the Scriptures.
45 seconds left, Travis. So what's behind this? Why do we see this conflict among Republicans and some Democrats over this free speech aspect?
Yeah, so, Tony, let's take a look at the times we're in. October 7th. Then the U.S. abstaining Security Council moves against Israel. Iran attacks Israel. We're in times in which Israel is in the crosshairs, so we need to be discerning as believers and pause, and ask the Lord. We need to ask the Lord before we jump to what is around us and what people are saying on social media. Lord, what is going on here? And then allow the Holy Spirit to bring the Scriptures to bear on the truth of the matter using discernment.
We cannot see these issues apart from the spiritual climate, the spiritual forces that are at work.
We can't. We have to see them in that context.
And in order to do that, we have to, as you said, we have to have discernment. But to have discernment, you have to be in the Word of God.
And saying, Lord, help me, wanting that.
Right. Wanting and that's that. What makes this program different. We look at these issues with that spiritual perspective. In addition to the politics, we get the politics and policy, but we cannot deal with these issues today without seeing the spiritual.
We can't. We say, Lord, help us bring the truth to bear for the blessing of all people.
Travis Weber, thanks so much.
Thank you.
All right, folks, stick with us. We have more Washington Watch straight ahead after the break. Don't go anywhere.
Christians must be sure to faithfully think about the issues that have taken our culture and many of our churches by storm from a biblical perspective. Family Research Council's David Clawson, along with co-authors Denny Burke and Colin Smothers, released a new book, Male and Female, He Created Them, a study on gender, sexuality, and marriage to help Christians better grasp the Bible's teaching about these issues. This study presents a biblical view of homosexuality, transgenderism, and marriage. With this new resource, readers will be given guidance on specific specific questions related to preferred pronouns, identity, intersex conditions, and other matters that our churches must be discipling their members to respond to with love and biblical conviction. As part of the study, readers have access to supplemental videos by Dr. Albert Moeller, Dr. Heath Lambert, Reverend H.B. Charles, Dr. Christopher Yuan, Dr. Rosaria Butterfield, and others that expand and elaborate the themes of each chapter. To purchase a copy, go to hecreatedthem.org.
Today we find that global persecutions of Christians is growing more menacing every year. Family Research Council's Lila Gilbert, Ariel Del Turco, and Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin's book, Heroic Faith, shares personal stories from those who have endured religious persecution and gives a close look at the dire situations Christians often face due to dangerous and sometimes deadly opposition to their faith. The book's true stories of persistence and faithfulness amidst crisis offer inspiration and hope. Heroic Faith also provides insights into the ideologies driving the hostility and persecution, what steps the U.S. government might take to help, and how readers can best respond to the struggles of the faithful. It is critical for us to learn from our brothers and sisters who are suffering deeply and to do whatever we can to help. You can get your copy of Heroic Faith wherever books are sold or by going to frc.org/heroicfaith. Again, that's frc.org/heroicfaith. Men are constantly told that there is no place for their thoughts and concerns about abortion. However, this attitude ignores the fact that both women and men are deeply and personally affected by abortion. Furthermore, one does not have to be a woman to know that abortion ends the life of an innocent, unborn child. Every man has a role to play in protecting unborn lives and supporting the mothers in their families and greater community, which is why FRC's Center for Human Dignity has released a resource titled A Man's Guide to Standing for Life. This resource was created to help men positively address the topic of life. This guide will equip men with phrases to utilize or avoid, as well as practical tips for helping to protect life and the expectant mother or unborn child he knows. Every man has the opportunity to be an unborn baby's hero by stepping in to support a mother and speaking up for her child's life. Get this free guide at frc.org/prolifemen to learn more about the important role men play in protecting unborn lives.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perk. It's good to have you with us on this Thursday. Let me again remind you, May the 19th, our Pray For and Stand With Israel Sunday. You can be a part of it. Simply text Israel to 67742. That's Israel to 67742. You'll get a link. Sign up. We'd love to have you as a church, individuals, whatever. Text Israel to 67742. Our word for today comes from Judges chapter 10. Then the children of Israel did evil in the sight of the Lord and served the Baals and the Ashtoreths, and they forsook the Lord and did not serve him. So the anger of the Lord was hot against Israel, and he sold them into the hands of the Philistines and into the hands of the people of Ammon. And the children of Israel cried out to the Lord, saying, "We have sinned against you because we have both forsaken our God and served the Baals." They said, "We've sinned." Now, that is an expression of remorse for the political oppression, which was the result of their spiritual apostasy. But remorse is not enough. Repentance is required. And when they acted upon their remorse and put away the foreign gods from among them and served the Lord, well, guess what? God moved and intervened on their behalf. And so it is with us. Remorse is not enough. Repentance is required. To find out more about our journey through the Bible, text Bible to 67742 and join me each day for a journey through the Bible. The Biden administration has shown tepid and often wavering support for Israel throughout its 7 months of war against Hamas. But this week, Secretary of State Antony Blinken admitted the obvious. The only real barrier to a ceasefire negotiation is Hamas, as they reject good faith offers from Israel. With an Israeli incursion into Rafah likely imminent and the Biden administration acknowledging the truth of Hamas's obstinance, what can we expect next on the ground in Gaza? Joining me now in studio to discuss this and much more is a member of the Israeli Knesset, Simcha Rothman. He serves in the Knesset for the National Religious Party, the Religious Zionism, and he is the chair of the Knesset's Constitution, Law, and Justice Committee. M.K. Rothman, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you for having me.
We were together this morning at the National Day of Prayer. at the Capitol. Your thoughts on that time of prayer?
I think it was. I felt very lucky and blessed for being invited to this event. I think it's important to remember that you can have the power to do things, but without the help of the Lord, of right. Hashem, you cannot succeed. And it's especially important for politicians to remember it. It's especially important when you sit in the capital of the superpower of the world. I think it's even more important message. And I hope more and more people will share these views and will understand that the need of the help from above is what we need to defeat the evil.
From your perspective, is that what strengthens the bond between the United States and Israel, is a common understanding of God?
Yes, and I think that the Israel in the founding of the United States, many people of the founding fathers were talking and thinking, and that they are creating a new Israel. You see it in the names of the cities. You see everywhere, because they understood it's a place that some of them came, so they will be able to worship freely. They ran away from people who did not let them worship the God the way they wanted. So it was based on religious freedom.
Right.
So people will be free to practice their beliefs. The people of Israel, as we all know, actually as the verses that you just read, came to the land of Israel, so they will be able to worship.
Right. And live freely according to their faith, not just to be able to worship, but all of life really is to be worship before God, our work, everything.
Yeah, and that's common understanding, I believe, in the shared values, is making the bond stronger.
So Israel, you know, coming up, is about to celebrate its 76th anniversary. You're facing the greatest threat since the founding of the nation in 1948.
Yes, and the threat, we need to understand, the threat is not Hamas. Hamas is a threat,
right,
and it needs to be eliminated. But the threat is that if Hamas will not be eliminated, we have the enemies surrounding us, and some of them living amongst us in Judea and Samaria, some of them. And we saw that when they felt that Israel is weak, they attacked.
Was that a part of the attack from Iran, perceiving weakness because Israel was being held back from going in and finishing off Hamas in Gaza?
I believe the attack also from Iran came because they understood that Israel might be alone. I think they discovered that Israel is not alone. We saw there was a famous economist front page saying Israel alone. We saw that Israel is not alone. We saw the help from the United States and other countries in the defense from the missiles from Iran. And we saw just last week the Congress approved the aid to Israel. And, of course, we are thankful for it. But the second our enemies feel, and by the way, our mutual enemies,
right.
They chant, and not by chance, they chant death to America,
right,
death
right,
to Israel.
Well, we're the big Satan. You're just a little Satan.
Yeah. So the second they discovered or they thought that there is a division, there is the alliance between the U.S. and Israel is not as strong, some of it because of saying that came from the State Department, some of it because of pressures, they mistakenly thought that's the time to attack Israel. We need to go against it. We need to stay united on the fight against evil.
So M.K. Rothman, let me ask you this then. With that in mind, there is evidence that these college campus riots, demonstrations, in part we've talked about, we do believe that it's a spiritual vacuum that's been created in this country because we've pushed God out of our, really, our public space. But there is evidence that there are outside agitators conspiring to do this. Is that a part of trying to create a narrative of division between the United States and Israel?
I think so. And I think that some people think, and I think it's a mistake, try to sell the narrative that the U.S. is being attacked because of its support of Israel. That's not true.
No.
That's not true, and I would say it's the other way around. If Israel, again, Israel is attacked by some people because of its connection to the U.S., but it doesn't matter because it's not about the connection.
But we have shared value. I mean, we're very similar.
Exactly. It's because of the shared values.
Right.
And it's not, so we cannot have the real choice not to be connected because we share the same values. And that's why our enemies sometimes define who we are better.
It's just
than
you're
who
in a,
we are.
You're just in a much worse neighborhood than we are. It's a pretty tough neighborhood
over there. Yes, but you need to know that the neighborhood becomes tougher also in the U.S. What's happening in campuses? What's happening in mosques all around the U.S.?
What has happened through the porous southern border?
Exactly.
And the cells that we have operating in this country. It's just a matter of time.
So Israel, I think the lesson from October 7th is double. There is one lesson that you should never turn a blind eye to evil and to terror and to people who want to kill you. The second lesson is that even when you are living in a very bad neighborhood, the power of the real ambition to forget the bad neighborhood, to look aside, to step away from the evil, which is understandable. No one wants to confront the evil day after day after day. It can, if it can happen to Israel, it can happen everywhere.
It was interesting. I was in Israel about a month ago and was meeting with now retired, but a former general, and asked him the question. I said, was it an over-reliance on technology that allowed the October 7th event? He said, in part, yes, but there was also an arrogance that we were overconfident. And if that's what I hear you saying, we have to be always vigilant.
We cannot allow the evil to be let alone.
Yeah.
Once you turn, you try to run away, and basically that's what we tried to do, to run away from the evil instead of confront it. So we ran away from Gaza in 2005, and we did the disengagement. I wasn't in politics, but I definitely was against it. But and some people said, okay, so we ran back to the old borders, and we closed the door, and now it will be okay. Immediately, it gave power to the evil. Hamas took over, and the rest is history, and terrible history.
Which is, by the way, should be Exhibit A of why a two-state solution won't work.
And I was very happy to read that President Trump said it in an interview that that the understanding that the two-state solution is really not a solution, and the Palestinian state is a terrible. A terrible way to destroy the state of Israel. This understanding must be way more broader than it is today.
Right. It's just a matter of education. Let's go now to the latest on the negotiations as Hamas continues to stall. Are we any closer to a ceasefire, seeing more of the hostages released?
The way to get to a ceasefire is to destroy Hamas. Hamas is not hiding the will and the means to destroy Israel, to have more and more October 7th. You can do a ceasefire when there is a war, there is a dispute, and you can postpone it. But Hamas already showed, first, that he's holding hostages, And as long as there is hostages, we cannot have a ceasefire. But also that if you, on October 6th, we had a ceasefire with Hamas.
Right.
So to say, let's have a ceasefire, what does it mean? When Israel will use the time of the ceasefire to make better inventions in the startup nations that we are, to create a better society, to create a better place for our children to grow. That's what Israel will use, a ceasefire time. Hamas will use ceasefire time to get more tunnels, more rockets, and to plan the next October 7th. That's why you cannot have a ceasefire with evil. You have to fight it.
Is there any advancement being made on the hostages that are still being held?
So I from what I hear, Hamas is not in any position to agree to release all the hostages. The deal of a partial release of the hostages is very, very dangerous. Israel, as it was said before, Israel is not the obstacle to bring back the hostages. Hamas should return the hostages, and actually, we need to put pressure on Hamas and Hamas enablers all around the world.
Yeah, who are those enablers?
So of course, the simple answer is Iran. And sadly, the sanctions over Iran were removed or diluted. So it became it became easier for them to support Hamas. UNRWA is another Hamas enabler. Also, were sanctioned before, and the American taxpayer paid hundreds of millions, right, billions of dollars.
They were removed from the latest appropriations bill.
Yeah, but over the past years, that it was paid by the U.S., by other countries. And this money turned the entire society of the Palestinians to support October 7th. They learned that in the schools paid.
I've seen the material. I've been there. I've seen the material.
And that's terrible. Anti-Semitic,
teaching children to hate, refusing to even acknowledge that Israel is a country.
And direct calls to terror and praises to anyone who committed terror. So terrorist is a hero to those children, and that's why they become terrorists
themselves.
What does
that look like in the future once Hamas is eliminated?
So I think that it made very clear by the Prime Minister Netanyahu that Israel must hold the Gaza Strip and have security power within the IDF. Because if we ran away, it will happen all over again. Gaza has to be demilitarized, and we have to get to make the process in some way it should be like what happened to Nazi Germany after World War II, of denazification of what's happening there. We need to make sure that the education system does not teach terror. We need to make sure that Hamas does not come back to power.
Got to be dealt with. And I think the determination is certainly there on behalf of the Israelis. M.K. Rothman, I want to thank you for joining us today on Washington.
Thank you for having me, and thank you for your prayers and support.
All right. Folks, thank you for joining us as well. Again, text Israel to 67742 to join us on May the 19th. Until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul. It says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you've taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.